Hi, this is Chioma from Advancement Project. I am here with the Director of Litigation, Gilda Daniels, and we're talking about the current status of voter suppression and voter restrictive procedures in the United States. Good afternoon.
Good. Thank you.
So just to get right into it, so voter suppression is not a new phenomenon. In your words, in what ways has communities of color been affected by voter suppression?
First of all, thank you, Chioma, for having me today. I'm really excited about participating in this process. In what ways have communities of color been affected mostly by voter suppression? I think it's important to look at voter suppression in the United States from a historical viewpoint so that we can then see how we continue to see these patterns, not only throughout our history, but contemporaneously as well. Historically, the vote was reserved for white male property owners, right? In the initiation of this country, you did not even have to be a citizen to vote. Merely if you owned property and you were white and you were a man, then you could vote. We know there was a civil war. We've had the Civil War Amendments, the 14th and 13th, 14th and 15th Amendments, which created the franchise and expanded the franchise for African American men, right? So men at that point were, then you had black men who were able to actually vote. We saw a less than 10-year period where we could see what democracy really looks like. And again, at that time, women still could not vote, but when we saw the franchise open, we saw remarkable events, particularly in this country after the Civil War and during the period of Reconstruction. And during Reconstruction, we had more African Americans in the Congress, in the House and the Senate, than we even do today. And certainly, and that was because the access to the ballot was wide open, right? And they allowed for the registration of newly enfranchised people to register and to vote. And so we had, you know, people on all levels, on school boards, on other local capacities, on the state level, and even in Congress. And seeing this, particularly in the South, is when we began to see certainly widespread voter suppression. Things like grandfather clauses, poll taxes, literacy tests, even felon disenfranchisement were ways in which they developed these laws for the sole purpose of stopping the access to the ballot on behalf of African Americans. And it was very, very, very effective. So you had widespread voter registration after these laws were passed in places like Louisiana. You go from, you know, 70% to 80% of registration to, after these laws are passed, to less than 5% of voter registration. So suppression was real. It was violent. People were killed. People were threatened. There was certainly economic threats where you would lose your job for if you registered. And at that time, if you voted Republican, right, you could lose your job. You could lose your home because at that time, you know, the Democrats were primarily in the South, and the Lincoln was Republican, and so many newly enfranchised persons voted as Republican. So you had that onslaught of voter intimidation, of white supremacy, white terrorism, that essentially made the right to vote for African Americans a non-event. And so that was certainly the history of voter suppression until we get to the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So it's almost 100 years from the passage of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the signing of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. And during that, you know, 100-year period, you have laws after laws after laws that were meant to keep black folk, brown folk, Native Americans, certainly black and brown folk away from the polls. And New York, as a matter of fact, had a literacy test for Puerto Rican citizens. That, you know, if you wanted to vote in New York, you had to come with essentially a document that said that you were literate. Certainly, and in the Southwest, we had the same kinds of
impact on African Americans you had on the Latinx communities. So from the passage of the Voting Rights Act allowed for federal employees to register brown and black people because the white registrars refused to. Therefore, you had like a less than 10% voter registration rate in places like Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi. After the 1965 Voting Rights Act and the placement of federal registrars, you saw those numbers increase. And so, and we've certainly seen the impact of the Voting Rights Act with the increase in black elected officials and other Latinx elected officials, Asian American elected officials. Certainly people of color have been elected at higher levels, voter registration levels are up. But what we're seeing now is that there are barriers at the polls, that you may be allowed to register, and there's still some issues with registration, but now I think we're seeing more widespread issues in regards to actually being able to cast a ballot. So I think today we're seeing how people are affected, whether it's long lines or voter purges or being removed from the rolls and then having to get placed on them. You know, the inaccuracy of these voter purges, it's a big issue in regards to access to the ballot as well.
So just speaking, you talk a lot about the history of it. Do you personally think there is enough political education surrounding voter suppression or voting rights in general?
I don't think so. I think voter suppression has essentially become one of those words that we hear, but we don't kind of dissect it to really understand what we mean when we say voter suppression. Because when we say voter suppression, we're essentially looking at at devices and mechanisms that prohibit or certainly diminish the opportunity to access the ballot. And those come in many forms, right? It could be voter deception, where you see something on social media that says Republicans vote on Tuesday and Democrats vote on Wednesday, when election day is actually Tuesday, right? Or there are flyers in neighborhoods that say if you have outstanding child support or traffic tickets, you cannot vote. Right, and those flyers are distributed in, you know, predominantly people of color neighborhoods. So the education comes in, and understanding what forms voter suppression can take. And also, and probably more importantly, for people understanding how they can access their right to vote, right? Understanding whether or not where they can register, and making sure that once they register that they get a confirmation, right, that they're from the registrar saying, oh, this is your polling place, these are your election districts, etc., and knowing what do you need to take to the voting booth. Do you need an ID in your state? And just knowing how to actually access. So I don't think we've talked enough about what the process is, and we've seen that, you know, there are barriers to access, but I think we can do a much better job of educating people on how to overcome those barriers.
Awesome, thank you. So I know there is a lot of things to watch out for and just be mindful about, but what do you think is the most important thing to be aware of when we talk about voter suppression in the 21st century?
I think the most important thing to be aware of is, I'm trying to think of how to say this. I think it's very important to understand the power of the vote, that your vote has power. And I think a lot of people have been dissuaded from actually voting. And I think if we, you know, talk more about the importance of voting. And in addition to the kind of nuts and bolts of how to actually cast a ballot, I think it's most important to get people motivated to vote, because, you know, in some elections we have a 30% turnout rate, right? So if you can increase the turnout rate so that people really feel like this is a meaningful process, because I think there are communities and there are places where people don't feel as if their vote is meaningful, or they don't have confidence in the process. I think when you hear, you know, the person sitting in the most powerful seat in the world talk about how it's rigged, you know, how elections are rigged, and you know, certainly cast aspersions on the process. I think whether you agree with him or not, there are people who may believe, well, what does it matter if I cast a ballot or not? So I think the most important thing is that we really kind of that we really stress to people that it is important that the vote is a powerful weapon that can be used and that can be used for good, right? Because you help, and it is really is your vote is your voice, because by voting you're saying who you want to govern, right? Who you want to represent you, and who you want to represent you in the Congress, who you want to represent you in the on the local level, on the state level, and those are all very important things.
Awesome. So as much as you can, I would like for you to imagine a world free from voter suppression and restrictive voting practices. What does that vision look like? What does that vision of free and safe look like to you?
A free and safe looks to me like a place where restrictions are removed from voting, where regardless of citizenship, certainly if age 18 and older, can use 18 and older as an age, but very few restrictions on the right to vote, and certainly for. And I think also that there's an interest in elections other than the presidential election. That there's an interest on school board, interest on the local level with school boards and county councilmen and those kinds of things. So those are the people that you're interfacing with on a more regular basis than the president of the United States. And I think it's very important to have people involved in that area. And that people actually run for office, right? That we get involved in our own representation and our own governance.
Awesome. So for somebody who could possibly be looking in, what can people be doing in terms of advocacy for people who are affected by voter suppression? What could you do right now?
All right. So I have, you generally have a three-pronged approach. It's educate, legislate, litigate. Right. And so with when I'm out speaking to organizations and speaking to groups, I try to leave them with those three things. I need you to educate yourselves about your voting and registration process in your localities. Right. When's the last day to register? How do you register? Where can you register? What is the election date? What offices are up for election? Who are these candidates? And how can they represent you? And go attend meetings, et cetera, et cetera. Educate yourself not only about the process, but about the candidates as well. And then once you've actually cast a ballot, that the process doesn't end and it's essentially just beginning, right? Because then you have people in place and you can petition them to get them to legislate in a way that is meaningful to your community. And even drafting legislation, and that's certainly something that we do here at Advancement Project, is, you know, working with groups on the ground, not only in the litigation process, which we'll talk about, which I'll talk about in a minute, but also in the legislative and policy process. And finding out, okay, what kinds of laws would you like to see in your community? Well, let's draft policy reports and draft legislation that we can present to legislators for their consideration, and hopefully make this situation, whether it's removing school resource officers from schools or voter ID issues, but educating ourselves about the process, then legislating, and then if legislation doesn't work, then using litigation as a tool as well.
that in litigating, litigating to try to create this environment where all people have access to the right to vote.
Awesome. Well, this was a wealth of information, and I thank you so much, Gilda, for talking to me and discussing all these wonderful things with me today.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chioma.